Welcome to the Extreme Health Secrets Inner Circle Teleclass Series, where we talk about the secrets to getting extreme results in your life, health, and body. I'm Danielle Demchok. I'm a certified nutrition and lifestyle coach, and today's call is how to better communicate with your lover so they can hear and understand you. Our guest today will help you discover how to communicate better with your lover so that you can feel heard and understood without shutting down or running away because you're so frustrated with the constant yelling, fighting, and or silence that may exist between the two of you because your communication has broken down. He will show you the first step to opening up the communication with your partner so that you can begin communicating from your heart and not out of anger and frustration. Gary Selby is the passion consultant. He is an author, speaker, catalyst, change agent, and guide. His core values and passions are serving the world and individuals and having greater truth, consciousness, and inspiring relationships and more purposeful lives. His new book, 50 Ways to Love Your Lover, is a powerful and enjoyable reference to improve your love life, your romance, and your relationships, whether you're already in one or you are single. His coaching and public events are a place of joy, healing, and transformation and inspiration. So I'd like to welcome Barry Selby. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Danielle. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for being here, taking time out of your busy day to be with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I always love being able to share and support many people in having what they want in relationships and in life itself.
That's wonderful. I'm so excited. So let's. I have some questions for you. What led you to helping women around the world to start to heal their relationships with themselves so that they could find their soulmate?
Well, to put it bluntly, I have some interesting history myself in past relationships, and I saw, after I went through my own transformation of recognizing what I was contributing to that conundrum, how I could help other people have that too. And my primary focus has been working with women because they're the people I know best, having dated more women than I don't date men, if that makes any sense.
Okay. And do you believe in soulmates? I know that there's different thoughts around what a soulmate is, if it exists, and if
right.
So, what's your definition of soulmate?
Well, for me, soulmate is, let me say this, there is the romantic thought that everyone has one soulmate, and that's the way it is. I disagree with that label, but I do believe we have soulmates, plural. I've experienced myself crossing paths with at least three different people over the last couple of decades who I recognized. It's like you have this, the way they say that when you meet a soulmate, you recognize them across the room, you feel it. It's like it's true, you do. However, there isn't just that one person in the world who would be your perfect partner. I thought that was the case the first time I met somebody that I had that connection with, but then I recognized that happened more than once. And what it is that we are all, from a spiritual point of view, come from the same source. And I'm of the belief that we are basically spiritual beings having a human experience. And that being the case, we have the opportunity to meet like individuals, people who are from our same source, our same innate group we came in with. It's trying to explain this is hard to articulate in functional language, but let me back up again. We don't have one soulmate. That's the thing I really get challenged with. We have someone we can become soulmates with because we are already spiritual beings, have human experience with that person. And as we shed the walls and the illusions and the ego positions in our intimacy, we recognize our partner can be that soulmate who we're already with.
And what does it feel like? I know, come into contact with your soulmate. What is that feeling for you? Some people can relate to.
If I can articulate it, it's the best way of saying it is having this deep, automatic knowing that this person is somebody I know. It's not deja vu. It's like deja vu, but magnified 1,000%. You know, because we have these feelings where we go, it feels familiar. Yes, take that and magnify it by a lot, by thousands and hundreds of thousands of percentage. You'll feel like you've known this person forever. And in most cases, you have. And the thing is, it may not be a romantic interest. This person may be an older person, younger person, same gender, totally unrelated. But you feel that connection because this is my belief, not everyone's belief this, that we are indeed spiritual beings having a human experience. We do come through this physical plane more than once, I believe, as well. Now, for those people who are very strictly religious, they may not agree with this perception, so I understand with different viewpoints. But for me, I know that we do, and from my own memory, you know, it's not memory's reference, so I'm saying it's a fact of life. It's my perception is that I've been here more than once. I've been that reincarnation discussion can open up a whole other conversation. Well, it does, but at the same time, we indeed create an experience every time we come in. We have an experience because it's almost like we choose to come back in for different reasons. And so we will meet somebody we may have been in a relationship with before in a past life, if you want to use this terminology. And then when we're in this life with them, it may not be lined up that way, but the familiarity is there. So we go, I know you. It's a somatic connection, but the timing may not be where you are chosen to be together this lifetime.
Yeah, I've had that feeling.
Okay, good. I'm not alone then, thankfully.
Say that again, Barry.
I'm not alone with that one, which is good.
So, Barry, I'm curious. Yeah. You say that if most single women, I was reading your blog and one of the articles, and you said that if most single women met their soulmate, they wouldn't be ready, and most likely their soulmate wouldn't even recognize them. Can you share with us why that is?
Yes, but let me also state that this is true both directions, for male and female. So it's not just for women. I don't want to put women in the wrong box, as it were, in this case. The truth is that men and women, unless they choose to do the work on themselves to be the cleanest and healthiest in their spiritual and emotional content, they may meet their, quote, soulmate, but because they haven't healed their past baggage or clarified who they are, they won't recognize their soulmate and vice versa. And in fact, and more clearly, they wouldn't necessarily be attracted to their soulmate because we have, in a human experience, this wonderful thing called memory. And what we do is we go through our relationships, including going far back as our childhood experiences with parents, where we accumulate memories of what relationships should look like and should be like, and we perpetuate those patterns again and again in new relationships. So if one of my clients, for example, was a place where she was raised in a family where the father was never around. He was a workaholic. He was gone all the time. And she basically had, potentially speaking, abandonment issues. So she would end up dating men automatically, and she would end up meeting them knowing this, but then the relationship would unfold this way, where they would have this pattern where he would basically be unavailable, maybe emotionally unavailable, or maybe physically unavailable because he's away all the time. But she would repeat the pattern that her dad had implanted into her without even realizing it, because she had a perception that the male person in her life would not be around. Now, they can also go to other extremes of abuse or other patterns that are not as necessarily a little more painful. But the truth is, we will then attract, or I should say, we will not be attracted to somebody who does not have that built-in pattern in them. So, for example, if my client had met somebody who was their soulmate, that person who would be so incredibly great for them, but doesn't have the pattern of abandonment within them, they wouldn't be attracted to each other.
So what you're saying is that, I mean, what I heard, and you could correct me if this isn't what you're saying, is that when we have worked through some of our own issues, then we'll be more likely to invite in our soulmate.
Yes.
And it could be... Sorry, go ahead.
Not you.
So... we will be needing possible soulmates that will help us to see our wounds that we have, or the healing that we haven't done yet. And then once we work through that, we'll meet another soulmate that will help us to go further with that, and then further as we continue to evolve.
You're putting together two things that I wouldn't necessarily say go together, because the thing about the soulmate conversation, that's a different conversation. So when I use the languaging about how if you haven't done the work on yourself, when you meet your soulmate, you wouldn't recognize them and they wouldn't recognize you. The truth is that we are continually growing and evolving. And it's true that relationship is one of the biggest and most immersive learning opportunities we have in life.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship with somebody is where more and more of our own issues, our own possibilities, our own patterns will show up in our face, because that's one of the gifts of a relationship. So regardless of being with a soulmate or not, when we're in a relationship, we have an opportunity to grow through, to heal, to transform, to move beyond old patterns, because we'll see them more readily when we're in a relationship. When we're alone, it's kind of like that part of our life is turned off.
Mm-hmm.
When we're single, it's quite often that our patterns are idle at this point, because they're not being interacted with by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But when we do get into a relationship, is when all that wonderful stuff shows up to be worked on, because that's the gift of the relationship.
So the one thing I hear you saying is, just because you're soulmates doesn't mean it's not necessarily going to be like so peachy. Not everything is going to be perfect and happy all the time.
Well, the thing about that is it comes down to, you know, if we're really committed to the loving and committed to the depth, especially with someone who we want to have that soulmate journey with, presuming that's the person we're with, then to choose to do the work and to do the work to get deeper into relationship is the goal, versus saying, oh, this person is wrong and I'm going to judge them and I'm going to walk away. There's the difference of understanding that we are that committed to the relationship that we have. Because ultimately the truth is, it really doesn't matter ultimately who you're with. The patterns that you have are your own patterns. They're still
going
to show up. So might as well do them in the one you're in net with now. And yes, if you choose to then leave to do the work on your own, you can do that because you've already started the process. But having the opportunity to work through those issues and to be, for example, to work through the part where you feel abandoned, so you actually learn how to not abandon yourself, and then you heal that relationship with yourself so you're more loving to take that paradigm further, means that when you're with somebody else, the abandonment is not relevant to you anymore.
Right.
And that's transformational, because when it happens, that pattern that used to run your life is gone. And that's huge.
Yeah. Absolutely. So how can partners, in it, kind of switching gears here, but maybe it's very connected, how can partners start to communicate better so that they feel heard and understood, even in the most difficult and painful times in a relationship, say a partner cheated on another partner, or whatever the difficult situation could be? Once we're in this relationship, how can we feel heard and understood better?
Well, this opens up a very big conversation, so let me give you some points first. I'll get the idea about the conversation about cheating later on, because that has a whole other paradigm to it about trust and being faithful with each other. But if we have upset with a partner, the first question you're going to ask yourself is, where in me is this residing? Where in me is the emotion being stirred, the energy, the pain, suffering inside of me showing up? Because in relationship, again, because there's two partners involved, it's very easy and often more convenient to presume it's the other person's fault. To presume
right.
The other person's what started this, and therefore they're going to fix it, I don't have to do anything. That's kind of the automatic pilot language we're telling ourselves. And the truth is, that's not the case. Because, yes, that person may have done something, but how we choose to react to it, or how we actually do react to it, that's the focus point. And so in relationship with a partner, it's absolutely fundamental that if there is an upset or a discord, start with yourself first. And yes, there's communication to be had, most likely and most certainly. At the same time, it starts from the ownership language of ourselves, where I'm upset because of something and I'm taking it out on you, or what you did triggered that in me. So again, you take this one, it gives you back responsibility, gives you your power back. Because if you're upset because you blame something else, they have the power now. You don't.
Right.
So it's fundamental to really know where inside yourself the upset comes from, because quite likely, and not to say you should be thanking other persons for this, because you may not be able to feel like being able to thank them, but most likely if there's an upset showing up, it's a reminder or an echo of an earlier experience. And again, I do tend to talk about the parent stuff because we tend, most people have not resolved this. So we carry forward patterns from our own past into future relationships or into present relationships. So that upset shows up often is a reminder of something not resolved from the past. And the willingness to do that work will transform one's role. And at the end of that, there will be gratitude, certainly for yourself for having done the work. And secondly, you may realize that person was gifting that to you so you can move forward. Maybe with that person, maybe not with that person. But that's the gift they bring.
So when they're like in the middle of this heated conversation and things are very tense, and how do you start to open up that communication to even begin? Like, what were the words that you'd even say, or how do you even get to a place where you're able to start to open up the communication?
Well, there's different things. The challenge is if you're both partners are in absolute emotional upset, then neither one of you is able to think fair enough to go, whoa, hang on a second, I need to sit with this for a moment.
Right.
So it is the first one who gets that insight and it chooses it, because getting the awareness doesn't mean you say choose it, because you might say, no, I'm enjoying the upset too much, as we do that. And one of my teachers many years ago, she said about her and her husband, is they had this thing, and it worked for them because they've been so well, they've done this work so much, is there might be a big kick down, drag out fight about something, they'd argue and they'd be upset about it. And in the middle of it, she would turn to him and basically yelling at him, like, you did this, you did this, you did this, and by the way, I love you. And it stopped him in his tracks. Because it was a thing. I mean, it sounds so crazy to say that, but it was that was the thing that worked for them. And now I'm not saying it's the only way to do it, but the fact that she had it, because first of all, it cracked him up. Because he suddenly realized, hang on, we're arguing over stuff and we're still loving. And that shifted everything, where the conversation suddenly broke into a conversation versus an argument. Now I need to take, let me throw some of my own history into this to give personal experience. And this is slightly different, but I'll tie it together. And I just went home last week to see my parents. My parents are now been together 58 years. And my mum's in nursing home because she's basically slowly, I'm going to say this, in decline physically. And it's a challenge at certain times. And I watch my dad going through the process of preparing to lose her, because he knows it's coming. And, you know, I was 58 years, they're barely a bit apart. And I reflect back on the relationship when I was growing up. Their relationship was one where they never really, I'm aware of, argued. They had differences of opinion, but they never had any arguments I can remember. Now, well, they had them not. My memory was they didn't have any arguments. Again, it's maybe important to declare that, because that's a key piece of it. So my early dating experience in my teens and my 20s was that I had that ideal relationship to match to, my parents' relationship, where everything was perfect. Again, my filters, my perception. Everything was okay, never any arguments, always loving. So any time I get into intimate connection with a partner, you know, I'd have a great connection, it'd be great sex, and it'd be wonderful. As soon as there was a difference of opinion that became an argument, I'd walk away. Because it proved to me that this relationship I was in couldn't match the ideal I had of my parents, and it never stepped up to that ideal. It was really crap my style, to be honest, because it really showed me I wasn't able to have a relationship like my parents did, which is what started me on this journey back in my 20s, because I knew something was wrong in this picture, because how could I keep having the same mistake happen, but my parents right in front of me are showing how it can work. What's the difference? And so a large part of it is the ability to articulate and to communicate, because by speaking from our own experience, our own pain, our own suffering, we take ownership. When we say, you know, you did this, you did that, you didn't do that, or you did this, quite often the arguments are on something extremely petty, like taking out the trash or left the kettle for toothpaste. Those are straws that broke the camel's back, as it were. They are the things that are not the real issue. They are the triggers. But the issue is much deeper than that.
And taking
ownership of the emotional upset, taking ownership of what the discord is, so that the true cause of the upset can be revealed.
Mm-hmm.
Then there can be healing and transformation.
Mm.
You know, did that answer your question? The one I covered a little
bit. You did. I think you answered my question. Thank you.
Certainly.
Now, we hear a lot, Barry, about this masculine and feminine energy when it comes to relationships. And
yes.
Many different coaches have many different ideas, and many philosophers have many different ideas on what masculine and feminine energy is.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to hear what masculine energy is to you, and then what are the three characteristics that really make up masculine energy?
Okay. Well, let me start by stating that masculine and feminine are like the yin and yang. There is a perfect matching of puzzle pieces, as it were, between masculine and feminine. In a relationship, in a heterosexual relationship, I'd say to a large degree, in also a homosexual relationship, I'm going to stay with heterosexuals, that's the ones I know best. In a heterosexual relationship, the two partners will combined have 100% masculine, 100% feminine energy in the relationship. Now, it doesn't mean that 100% of the masculine lives in the man, 100% the feminine lives in the woman. It does vary. Quite often it's like a 70-30 split or something like that, where the man may carry in his strongest place 70% masculine and 30% feminine, and his female partner would carry 70% feminine and 30% masculine. Sometimes it's flipped completely. So I want to put those in front first to understand that I'm not talking about the gender here, I'm talking about the polarity. So masculine and feminine are very different. In masculine, which I tend to be much more better at now than I used to be, the biggest key thing about the masculine is that we are most effectively. First of all, we have directionality. The masculine is a goal focus. Again, feminine carries this too, but for men, more often than not, we are focused towards the result. It's like the thing.
So masculine energy is very result and driven.
Driven, yes, exactly. So we're not so much interested in the journey as we are about getting there. Whereas the feminine is about enjoying the journey. And I'm going to probably put a little more feminine into the conversation because I want to show the differences. Feminine, to go outside, is about movement and life and the energy of what's moving. Everything, like the planet itself, is feminine. The masculine energy, being the opposite of that, is death, in the sense that we are about completion, ending, done. We're also, masculine is also about presence. So feminine is about movement. Masculine is about stillness. Again, we do the polar opposites because that's the way the dance works. So characteristics of the masculine, yes, are directionality and having a result focus or result driven modality, that being present and being still, and it being focused on the completion.
What was the last one, Barry?
Being focused on completion.
Completion, okay.
Yes. Now, Alison Armstrong talks about hunter-gatherer languaging, and she's another one of these teachers I love and respect about relationships, in the sense that we, as men, were, generally speaking, we were the hunters in ancient times. So we would absolutely block out everything except the goal we were focusing on, which is what we're trained to do as men. So even in modern times, in the corporate world or in business, our focus is get the gold, get the result, be done. The feminine, in the women in her feminine, was more about being aware of everything around them. She was in a lot of ways a protector because she kept an eye on everything. And in physiological statements, it's been proven that, to a large degree, women have better peripheral vision than men do because they're built that way. Men are more myopic vision. We're linear. The other thing is also, which is key about the energy masculine and feminine, masculine is a linear mindset.
Mm.
Step one, then step two, step three. Whereas the feminine can do step one, six, two, seven at the same time and not confuse themselves. It's a gift the feminine has that I, frankly, am not very good at. But it's one of those skill sets, because not to put stereotypes in place. However, women in ancient times were focused on keeping the family safe, the different kids, and what's happening in the house, and make sure there's no food in the fridge. You know, it's all these different pieces of the puzzle, which was what the feminine was naturally gifted at. And so it's funny, I've been noticing lately how there's been a shift and there's been a need in this culture for more feminine mindset in the culture, because there's been such a competitive, combative, and me first, you last energetic in the way we're doing things in politics and in the culture, it's ultimately going to destroy us if we don't do something different. So the feminine is much more necessary now than ever before.
And the three characteristics of the feminine, could you just go over those again so I get them,
yeah.
Barry?
Absolutely. These aren't the only three, of course. But one of the things about the feminine is basically more ability, more able to see more at the same time. And it's, an example of that is, for example, and I've seen this illustration before, if you look at the color palette for clothing or for paint or anything else, if you ask a man how many colors there are, there's probably about 7 or 8, it's the colors of the rainbow. You've got yellow, red, blue, green, purple, etc. But the feminine can see nuance and subtlety. So when you ask her what color her blouse is, the man would say, well, that's purple. But she may say mauve or plum or some other color and some other derivative because the sensitivity is different. Feminine is more sensitive. That's a key difference between us and the feminine. The feminine energy is more sensitive. And again, I want to go back and say this one more time. I'm not speaking about gender here. There are men
right.
who are extremely sensitive and they're feminine. And one of my gifts I carry is I have a very strong feminine ability with women, which is one reason they trust me more, because I hold that space for them, and it's that sensitivity. So the feminine is more sensitive naturally. The feminine, again, is also about the ability to move and have freedom and flexibility and not really focus much on the results as much as enjoying the journey, the process, being in the moment of what's happening. And that's one reason I would say that, for example, in meditation, it's one of my favorite little reminders to people, a sitting still meditation, because it's a stillness exercise, is a masculine practice.
Mm.
A feminine meditation is dance or yoga, as examples, because they're movement-oriented. So the feminine is about movement.
Mm.
Now, again, men are involved in movement too. Men do yoga too. But the truth is that the movement energy in yoga is feminine. The strength aspect of yoga is masculine. And that's just stillness, because strength is built through stillness in some ways, and that's a whole other conversation to go into. So that's the second one. The third one for the feminine is, another part of the feminine is the feminine has a strength that supersedes the masculine. And this is going to upset some people. I talk about this as like in, let me back up a second. To put the masculine and feminine together is saying that the flag can't fly without a flagpole. The masculine is the stillness of the flagpole. The feminine is the movement of the flag.
I like that visual.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. The other side is looking also in a river. A river is extremely powerful when it's raging and running, and in the feminine, that's what the feminine is. It's such power, such strength in flow and grace. However, it could not be a river without river banks. So the feminine can't be at full power in her flow that way without the masculine banks of stability and structure, which ties me back to one of my favorite analogies I use for the masculine and feminine. In fact, one of my favorite things to watch people do to see how naturally they are aligned in the masculine and feminine is to watch people when they do Argentine tango, the dance. Because Argentine tango, for me, and there are other ones too, but for me, this is my favorite one. There are other dancers do the same thing. But in the Argentine tango, the male partner and the female partner have specific roles. If the person in the opposite role doesn't do well, the person who's dancing with them can't dance.
Right.
You know, so it's the masculine creates a solid structure and a support structure that the woman can lean into, literally lean into and trust. And she's free to dance and flow and be sexy and do all those things she does so beautifully. But if she won't let him do it because she has no masculine too much, he can't control. Can't control the pace. He can't create the stability. He can't create the format that she can then dance into.
Mhm. Yep. And what happens? That. Thank you, Barry. So wait, the three are. The first one is. I just want to go over the three to make sure that our listeners are clear. One last time. So can you just run through those three really quickly here, Barry?
I hope so. I'm losing the script, so I'm seeing my pants on this one. One of them is about the movement energy.
Yes, having the movement versus stillness.
Yes, because the feminine is more vital, more alive, more present to itself as the feminine when it's in movement and action. And it's not about necessarily going towards a goal or anything in particular, it's just that it's moving for movement's sake. Freedom to flow, to dance, to grace. Women who wear, and again, I'm not, this is a generalization, but the pure feminine in clothing. The feminine is in lace and frill and things that just titillate and dance. So the feminine loves to have long flowing hair and the dance of earrings and jewelry that flows and flitters, because that's movement energy, that's light, that's the expression of the feminine.
Okay.
And again, before I get lots of hate mail, it doesn't mean that a woman who likes to wear business suits is not feminine. It's just
right.
Part of the expression of the feminine. It's part of the expression.
Got it.
Yeah, she can include. And she might enjoy it if she does that more. So the same.
Right. And then so movement, and then what was the last two?
One of them is about the spectrum of awareness.
So having a keener sensitivity.
Yes, and a wider sensitivity, because, again, the masculine's focus is more linear, more goal-oriented, whereas the feminine is much more multitasking, is the way of putting it, but also having a more diverse ability to see things all at once. So the feminine can see a bigger picture than the masculine can naturally. You can both switch gears and see the other side as well. At the same time, having the ability to see the bigger picture is a feminine gift and ability. So the color spectrum is the thing it talks about, an analogy about how the masculine and feminine, the masculine sees a few colors, the feminine sees many colors when it comes to clothing or paint or that sort of thing.
Yes. That makes sense, especially if you're hunting. You don't want to be seeing everything in sight. You want to see your target.
Right.
And then one was...
So it was movement.
And then the second one was having this... enjoying the journey. That men are more result-driven and women more so are, dancing on the journey.
Exactly.
Cool. This is, and like you had said already, Barry, that it's not necessarily gender-specific, that these are energies.
Right.
Okay, so what is the first step, now understanding more about masculine and feminine energy, what's the first step when opening up communication with your partner when you can't seem to communicate because you're angry, hurt, or frustrated?
What is the first thing?
Yes, what is like the first step to opening up communication with your partner when you can't seem to communicate because you're angry or hurt or frustrated?
One of the biggest pieces I talk about with clients and I recommend highly is to first of all just recognize your own part in the conversation.
Could you say that one more time, Barry?
The first thing I recommend is to recognize your own part in the conversation. Your own role. So it basically means that when you communicate, you're communicating from the place of saying, this is what my experience is, not saying you did this to me, because the thing you're not about focusing on is being a victim. You're focusing on being responsible and accountable. So by having your own language of this is what I perceive that I was, my participation, my role, and what I felt like when you said this, I heard you say this, and this, and then I reacted because I felt like you were doing this to me. So you're saying what you perceive the person is doing, but you're saying from the point of view of ownership of your own language. And that's a different place.
Yeah, it can be hard, too, to do that when you're in the emotion of it. So do you recommend that people step away first when they find themselves in that place of, such anger and such frustration, and then come back to it from the place and reconvene from a place of, okay, this is how I'm feeling when, this is happening? Or when you say certain things like this, this is how I'm experiencing it.
Well, the thing is, it's really up to the partner involved, because having that break can be necessary, and sometimes it's more about just saying, hang on a second, let me shift gears from judging and reaction to what's my part in this, and how do I take back my own beliefs and feelings of ownership and languaging so I can become responsible again.
So that you're really empowering yourself in the conversation.
Exactly, and not at the cost of the other person. It's about taking care of yourself. The thing that comes back to again and again is that we have this innate programming that partners will stir up in us old patterns. Those old patterns, we don't choose to have control over. We become victims of it because normally those things started when we were a child. So those patterns we picked up from our parents' model in a relationship, we then perpetuate on our partners, and it's automatic pilot. So when we take responsibility, suddenly we've taken the thing out of gear to stop the pattern from running automatically, and we can do something different. That's transformational right there because it gives us back the power to change.
So, yeah, one of the things that I noticed with some clients that I work with is they at times will continue to do the things the same way and expect a different result.
Right.
So if you keep going down
the definition of insanity.
Exactly. If you keep going in and trying to butt heads again and again without taking responsibility, one of the biggest things that I find is they come against the you did this, you did that, I can't stand when you do this, and what happens is they start to lose themselves the minute they start to blame or shame the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And they disempower themselves.
Right.
And I've done it too.
Yeah.
So at that moment of when we start to take ownership and really start to empower ourselves by saying, hey, wait a minute, let me step back from this and feel what's triggering me, what's upsetting me, how I'm experiencing this other human being in front of me, and where can I start to take some responsibility so that I can now own the part that I have in this conversation.
Right. Absolutely. And it is huge when you start doing that. And again, this is not actually to fix the other person or to make the person right or wrong. It's about taking ownership so you can make yourself whole and healthy and loving.
Versus continuing to lose yourself in the relationship or the argument.
Exactly.
Can you give us, Barry, one practical tool that we can leave with today that will show us how to better communicate with our partners immediately?
I would say the biggest thing it comes back to is taking ownership. So if the first thing that you do with your partner when or if something upsets you, do you say, okay, first of all, how does this remind me of me? Where have I done this before? Where has this happened to me before? And where did this start? Because that will change your perception from being an immediate reactive one to where you can actually see a bigger picture and go, oh, hang on a second. This happened with my first partner way back when, or it happened when I was a kid, and that's not true for me anymore. So starting, I mean, it's a big one to start with. I'm not sort of saying, you know, just do a little step. But if you want a little step, I'd say, you know, first of all, stop, take a breath, think about taking 10 seconds to breathe. Definitely is a good start. But the truth is, if we first catch right at the beginning that this transformation, this shift, this discord tracks back something else in our own history, that will shift everything.
That sounds really important. So basically, what you're saying, Barry, is when we're in a heated conversation and we want to learn how to really start to communicate better with our partner is to just maybe stop and say, you know, I'm triggered because this is feeling very similar to something I felt before in past relationships. And I'm, you know, let me see if I can figure it out for myself. Can you give me some time? I just need to kind of sit with this for a minute.
That works too, yeah. And of course, I can highly recommend going and seeing a relationship coach like myself.
That's right. And then you.
And I help them with that.
What I find, Barry, is that sometimes one partner in the relationship will want to do all the work, and the other partner wants to just sit and blame. What happens at that juncture?
Well, in my book, I talk about how relationships are like rubber bands. And I use that analogy because we have the opportunity in relationships to grow. And if we're not both choosing that growth path, it will create tension on the relationship like a rubber band being stretched. And basically at that point, one in three things can happen. One of the things that can happen is if the partner chooses to grow, the other person wants to sit and blame, the person who's been growing may say, you know what, I really think I just want to stay back where I am with this partner, and I'm going to keep blaming you as well. And basically you go back to the same blame game back and forward. The second option is, which is, again, to release tension on the rubber band, on the rubber band of the relationship, is that no one's committed to this, and the partner needs to step up to the same, play the same level I am, which they may do, which is both partners grow, and then there's no longer a place of blame showing up, and people, they're both growing, and the relationship continues to grow and evolve. The third option is that the person who is choosing to seek a more accountable, responsible mode of being, and the person who is choosing to stay in the blame game, neither one of them will move back to the center again, because they're choosing to take care of themselves the way they choose to, at least one of them is, then the rubber band will break, and the relationship will end. So the truth is, if one person is choosing to be more responsible and accountable in their relationship, but the other person isn't, and there's no sign of doing so, it's not healthy for them to stay together, but they're not helping each other.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's cold to say it that way, but the truth is that the person who's choosing to grow needs a partner who will grow with them. Otherwise, there's no point for them. They'll be so worn out and tired and frustrated because their partners won't be supporting them or be in a similar dance with them. You know, so you can't dance with somebody who's standing still.
I like that one. That you've got some really good visuals. You can't. hey, that's a tweetable. That's a tweetable.
Yes.
You can't dance with a partner that's standing still. Really hard.
Yeah, I use that one. That one just came out. I think, to be honest, I keep getting these ones out. I do talk about in my book and about in my coaching about Russian roulette of romance. You don't choose your partner with intention. So I do have a few of these things up my sleeve. But that was a new one. Dancing from the Spanish. So that was a good one. So, yes, you can use that one. You just want
okay.
to quote me.
That's tweetable.
Thank you.
So how does better communication, once both partners, say we're at that point now where both partners are committed to taking responsibility and ownership in the relationship, how can better communication increase intimacy?
Well, the first thing is that if you both are learning how to communicate more ownership language, then you're both being more present in the relationship, which automatically generates more intimacy. Because if I'm saying that my experience is this, you start to learn about me, about where I come from. That creates more connection, more intimacy. So that part alone will shift things. But the truth is always going to be setting you free more and more. And the more you're owning your own perception, your own experience, your own way of being, that will shift everything. And again, that opens up the space for intimacy and connection. And the other part as well is that when you're playing blame game and arguing upset, there's no room for intimacy that way. So the fact that you're shifting your position, saying, okay, how am I contributing to this, my own learning? How am I opening myself up to my partner to do this to me when I'm not taking responsibility? That shifts things again so you can be more intimate in your own vulnerability and truth.
Yeah, wow.
So I like how you
said that, you know, presence with self, presence with your partner allows for the space to have an intimate experience.
Yes. It is so clear that, a lot of people, unfortunately still, go into a relationship to basically be involved in the other person. It's the biggest mirror you have to see yourself. So having a clearer understanding of who you are while you're in a relationship, it's one of the biggest gifts you can have in a relationship, which creates more intimacy. So, yes, definitely it's a huge opportunity if you choose it.
Mm. So if a couple isn't having sex because the relationship has broken down to the point where neither partner trusts each other, how do you start to rebuild the trust? Just maybe one tip that you might have for our listeners.
Well, again, coming back to ownership language, by stating what you feel individually. Because the thing is, it's either staying in a place of like, well, we don't have intimacy anymore, and blaming and judging, which is the limited paradigm, the opportunity to expand into ownership and seeing where, in fact, we do have absolute clarity of our participation in that is what is the goal, is really the truth. It's like, you know, I pulled back because you did something 2 days ago where it reminded me when I was a kid this happened, and I just don't feel I can trust you, and it was nothing to do with you, but it's me. That sort of languaging, that sort of understanding, which will open up the doors for at least communication. And when there is, presuming, a restoration of the loving and restoration of the intimacy there, then intimacy on an emotional level and mental level can open up more room to have more of a physical intimacy on sex too.
Mm. Beautiful. That was, yeah, I mean, what I heard you say is that basically, sir, I love how you gave the example, because a lot of times people don't know the language to use to start to open up that, you know, broken down trust. But I think what you said is really important, as this is, you know, something that I experienced and, you know, I'm working through it and I'm having a hard time, you know, so it may look as though I'm not very open right now or not communicating, but it's because I'm working through some stuff that's really sensitive and touchy right now for me. So that it has nothing to do with the other person, per se, and trusting them is as much as that you're working through your own stuff trying to trust yourself.
Right.
Is that, I know I said it a little differently, but is that kind of what you're saying there?
Yeah,
I kind of made that my own version. So, Mary, this has been great. Did you want to add anything to what I just said or anything that you want to give voice to on that?
No, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, relationships, there's a lot to them, obviously. And what we covered here was just a snippet of what's available. That's why my book has 50 different principles that are about relationship, not about how to resolve problems, but 50 components that make relationships better.
And that's 50 ways to love your lover is what you're talking
yeah.
about, correct?
Yeah, yes. And so when I work with clients and I'm more light events, the conversation is always interesting for me because it always changes, because there's no one stereotype or fixed way of having a relationship. There's so many different varieties and flavors and styles out there. So there's a lot more to the conversation than what we covered here, but it's a good start.
Yeah, thank you so much, Barry. I know that there's so much. I asked you a lot of loaded questions that could probably be a teleclass just in itself, if not like a month of teleclasses in itself.
Yeah, there definitely seems to be an invitation coming up for a telesummit. I'm actually going to be on a couple of telesummits later this year, I believe, because there's so much that can be shared and provided for people to have better relationships. So, yes, it's a never-ending, in a good way, opportunity.
So how can the listeners learn more about what you do, Barry, or how to contact you? Where can they go?
Well, my website is up and running, although it's still in the rebuilding stage right now. The website I have been rebuilding because I had a slight problem recently, but you still can find out more about me there, which is thepassionconsultant.com, because that's who I am, my brand.
So that's thepassionconsultant.com. Okay.
Sorry, I'm running from an angle there. And at the same time, I have ongoing things that are opening up, new events that are putting together, and also have a couple of programs that are out there. So just watching my site and getting on my mailing list, we'll definitely get people interested, more information as it unfolds and happens. I guess I do have an intake form on my website for those who are jumping right in now saying, I want to work and do the work and have what I want in a relationship, which is something I don't stop people doing. And also the contact form for those who want to find out more information, as well as my book is on there. And in fact, there's 3 free chapters available for those people who want to just jump in and check out my book now. So,
and again, that book name is 50 Ways to Love Your Lover. So you can check that out on thepassionconsultant.com. You said that the 3 first chapters are available. So if you want to check out what Barry has.
They're actually 3 selected chapters, not the first 3, just in case people wonder. They're actually 3 chapters.
Oh, they get to pick which one.
No, I picked them.
Oh, okay. Okay, so there's 3 chapters that they can pick. That they can check out? Is that what you're saying? I'm sorry.
I basically have offered 3 specific chapters I chose out of my book to give as a free gift to people who want to sign up for my list and they get a free download.
I gotcha.
Ethical bribe, as they call it.
Well, go check out those free chapters that Barry has up there. Barry, I just want to thank you so much. Again, I want to reiterate that website. It's thepassion, consultant, consultant.com.
Yes.
And I just want to thank you so much, Barry, for being here with us. I learned a lot, and I enjoyed listening to you share your knowledge and expertise about how to have better communication and better relationships. Thank you so much.
Oh, Danielle, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye, Barry.